Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for the Doctors Roundtable, a forum for conversations with Atlanta's leading doctors and thought leaders about cutting-edge trends and topics in health, wellness, and lifestyle issues. Here's our host, Tanya Mack.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. Well, I'm very interested in our topic today. It is very timely. You almost cannot go to dinner or have a business conversation and not be listening to, talking about, or touching on health care reform. So today our topic is the Affordable Care Act, what to expect between now and the year end, and how to prepare for 2014. What are some key bullet points that consumers and employers need to know to be compliant and get prepared? I think I did in my research something like 6 in 10 Americans don't know what to expect as far as health care reform that will affect them. And just in the green room with my guests before we were talking, we were all in agreement that we're still kind of surprised by the confusion surrounding this. Well, maybe not so surprised. As we get into the topic, we'll find out. I want to introduce our guest today. I have two guests in the studio with me. First, I have Michelle Madison. I've known Michelle for a couple of years now. I'm thrilled to have her. She is a partner at Morris Manning & Martin, a law firm, and she especially specializes in the healthcare and health IT group, practice group. She's on many boards around town. She deals with Stark compliance, HIPAA law, all kinds of healthcare initiatives. So welcome, Michelle.
Thank you.
And I also have Jody Brainer with me. Joni is a UGA grad, so she's a local girl, local done well. Spoken by from two Buckeye. She's also vice president and a broker with the Hays Companies. Jody and Michelle also work together on a special healthcare interest group with the Technology Association of Georgia and serve on the board of that. And Jody's also on the board of Cobb Chamber of Commerce. So welcome, Jody.
Thank you very much.
Thrilled to have both of you. So what a timely topic. Would you agree?
Absolutely.
We see it in the headlines and we see it just in our conversations and family dinner tables kind of everywhere we go. And hopefully we can at least clarify some points, focusing not on the politics at all today, girls, but mostly on what is actual law, what are we going to have to comply with, kind of what's coming down the pike. So, Michelle, let's start with you, and let's talk about a few changes that we benefited from already, what is happening, especially beginning October 1, and let's just talk about what is the big kahuna. It looks kind of like 2014. Of all of our years of ramping up, will be the one that will experience a lot of change that we've kind of been waiting for.
Right. I mean, the Healthcare Reform Act is an act where it gets implemented over numerous years, all the way through 2020. So we have been ramping up. There have been changes on how healthcare is delivered, lots of innovative projects on bundled payment programs and changing how healthcare providers integrate together. And that's changed how we go to the hospital, how we see our doctors. Patients are more accountable. They're more engaged. And if you go to any hospital, you're finding that they're focused on patient engagement. How do I get the patient involved in their health care? Because in the future, hospital reimbursement and physician reimbursement is going to be very different as a result of the Health Care Reform Act.
And we will all have to learn to be more responsible for our own health and shopping for it and spending our dollars.
Yeah, because not only will the hospital and the physician reimbursement change, but individuals will start to see their premiums on their insurance change. Mm-hmm. So the more accountable you are with your nutrition, the more accountable you are with your exercise, may actually get you benefits on the premiums for your insurance as we move towards the full implementation. But as we've implemented so far, it's really focused on how do you change the dynamic and the culture of healthcare reform. 2014, the way I've been putting it, is it sets reimbursement on its ear. Because hospitals have historically, and physicians, have been getting fee-for-service reimbursement. Mm-hmm. So you go to the doc, they charge the fee for the service that they visited you, and then they get paid for that service, provided all the documentation is there, of course. And in that instance, it's going to change to quality outcomes, and you're going to have a new payer source. Because 2014 is where the payer sources change with healthcare reform. And what I mean by that is, today you'll go and you'll bill a third-party payer as your insurance company. In 2014, we're going to have a whole new system with the health insurance exchange, and all that's being ramped up starting October 1. And then you're also going to have a focus on individuals having to buy insurance. So in 2014, there were a couple of mandates that were supposed to go into effect in January. Some of them are still going into effect, but one of them has been delayed, and I think it makes a huge impact on the health insurance exchanges, and I'll explain that. Mm-hmm. Basically, starting in January, individuals will have to buy insurance if they make enough money that they would file taxes. And so that's on average about $10,000 for an individual, about $20,000 for a family or a couple. So if you have to file taxes and a tax return, you're going to have to buy insurance. And if you don't buy it, you're going to actually pay a penalty. And it ramps up. So 2014 is either the greater of $95 or 1% of your family income. And then 2015 is like $325 up to 2% of your family income. And then 2016, it goes to $695 or 2.5% of your family income. Well, why is that important? It's important if you don't have insurance now, making that determination of would I rather pay the tax slash penalty for this or would I rather buy the insurance?
Right.
And one avenue of buying the insurance, if your employer doesn't provide it, is through the health insurance exchanges, which I'm going to let Jody get into lots of detail on in a second. The other big thing that was supposed to happen in January is that employers who had more than 50 employees, full-time employees, were going to be required to provide insurance to their employees. And if they didn't, then there was a penalty that they would have to pay. And it varied. If they didn't buy insurance at all, they would have to pay a $2,000 penalty for every employee over 30. And if they had provided insurance, but it was so costly that their employees couldn't afford it because it was a certain percentage of their income, about 8% or more, then they have to pay a fine or a penalty of $3,000 for that employee and $2,000 for the rest. That caused huge chaos in the marketplace because employers were very concerned about this cost of A, healthcare premiums going up and having to buy the insurance, and then B, what if they pay the fines or the penalties instead? That's still a cost to the overall company. So just recently, and I mean very recently, the government said, we're going to delay that for a year. So employers now do not have to buy the insurance in 2014. They're going to delay it to 2015. Well, what that really means is that individuals still have to buy insurance. So they'll likely...
So some is still the same. I think a lot of people thought, oh, I'm off the hook. Jody and I were talking about that. But actually, the majority of those small business are still going to have to comply with the law.
Yeah, they'll still have to do something about the insurance, which could cause a huge amount of people who would not have gone into the health insurance exchanges originally to actually go into them if their employers don't have the mandate to provide the insurance. So I think the insurance plans that are planning to participate in the health insurance exchange may see this as a great way to bring in more people. The other items that are the health insurance exchange, the employer mandate being delayed a year, and the individual mandate to buy insurance really changes the dynamic from a healthcare provider providing care and the reimbursement coming to them. And from the consumer standpoint, it really impacts the decision-making of the individual. You know, people who have gone without insurance before now will likely buy insurance if they don't want to pay that penalty, and they may make the decision to go see the doctor more often because now they have coverage for that, which could also help us ultimately with improving patient outcomes because more people will actually...
So we get more into the preventive, keep healthy, instead of waiting until you have a catastrophic something because you haven't paid attention or you delayed because you didn't have insurance.
Exactly.
And then you had to go somewhere.
And so if you have coverage and you hurt your leg, you actually may go to the doctor to get it looked at versus I don't have coverage, so I'm just going to let it get worse. And then you wind up in the hospital because it has progressed, unfortunately. So it could really benefit in that arena. The other interesting thing in 2014 is if you're in a wellness program with your employer, you could get a discount off your insurance premiums, which is also going to drive, I think, a different mindset for the consumer in that, well, now I've got coverage and I could go and walk a day. I could use my pedometer. I might get a discount on my premium if I'm walking and tracking my steps. I would track my steps if I got a discount. So all of that, I think, is going to be an interesting change in how consumers and healthcare providers interact in 2014.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know the exact statistics, but I'm sure that small business in America is the number one employer. So even though the large employers that have provided care have gotten a reprieve of a little bit more time, the majority of people this will impact right away. So although there's been a delay for some, for the majority, there is no delay.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
okay. All right, let's talk a little bit about what is happening specifically in Georgia with the healthcare exchanges and the federal Medicaid support and kind of this whole, would you be brought up the topic of reimbursement, and here we jump right into it with our own state.
Right. Yeah, our state, among other southern states, have decided in 2014 they had the option to expand the Medicaid program.
Right.
So anybody who made from 133% of the federal poverty level and down would be eligible for Medicaid benefits. Well, that's somewhat costly. And in Georgia, I've seen numbers all over the place, but some of the numbers I've seen is that we would have had 650,000 people who could have fallen into that bucket at a cost of about $2.3 billion. Our state has elected not to expand Medicaid. And under the Supreme Court decision, when they upheld health care reform, that was the one area where they said the clause in the bill and the statute is unconstitutional, so therefore our state had the ability not to do that, among other states. I mean, you look at Florida, look at Alabama, look at South Carolina. Tennessee is still, I think, debating
this
issue.
There's actually quite a few states that have elected how Georgia has.
Exactly. And when you look at the map, it's really an interesting dynamic. And so from our state standpoint, that means if I'm a healthcare provider, people who I may have thought were going to go into the payer class of Medicaid and I was going to get Medicaid reimbursement, I can't count on those dollars anymore. And those individuals will likely have to go into the health insurance exchange unless their employer provides them care through their employment. But if you think about the individuals who maybe have a part-time job and they fall within that avenue of 100% to 133% of federal poverty level, that's a pretty significant amount of people. And so it'll be interesting to see where they actually get their insurance and if all of them make enough money to file tax returns to have to buy insurance, because that's the other impact.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the exchanges then. So they're going to start with open enrollment beginning October 1. This is specifically one of the things we were talking about. I've checked the website two or three times on and off just to see if there's new information, and I think we're all expecting to see it, but there's not a lot there, and we're getting really close. So why don't you just go over a little bit about what's going to happen? We will give the website at the end so people can check on their own, but just kind of what the expectation is and what we're hoping to see in the very near future there.
Well, similar to deciding not to expand Medicaid, Georgia also decided not to create its own health insurance exchange. So we're actually going to follow the federal blueprint for it, which, if you think in practical terms, I always picture it as the third-party payers who want to participate will have some type of product, and there'll be four different levels. There's the bronze, the silver, the gold, and the platinum level of coverage.
At different price points.
At different price points.
And service levels.
Right. So one will cover 90% of the cost, and one will cover 60% of the cost.
And your premium. The metal plans is what folks have been calling
them. Okay, good to know.
Yeah, I call them the jewelry plans.
Yes. The jewelry plans.
Very good. There
jewelry,
we go.
Metal, yes.
But they have different levels of benefits, and they'll have different premiums based upon what that coverage is. So if the insurance payers say, all right, we're going to participate, we're going to have a product that we're going to launch, and so individuals will be able to enroll in these products, and they'll be able to go through and say, all right, I want the bronze level, so 60% of my cost is covered. My out-of-pocket will be limited at a certain amount, and I'll pay a premium per year, either as an individual or as a family member. And that insurance, I always picture it as a website. You go, you click, you enroll, you get the insurance coverage, and it's going to be there for anybody who enrolls through the health insurance exchange. The health insurance exchange is supposed to be in effect and operating January 1st, 2014, so enrollment's going to start in October. So October's a very big month on the health insurance exchange. And the biggest question that I get on the provider side when I work with providers is how do we get to participate in it? And they're trying to contact all the payers to figure out if their rates are going to apply. And more than likely, they're going to have a different set of rates for the health insurance
exchange.
They'll
have a different fee schedule.
They will.
With the participants.
And they may not have all participants. They'll have to have a certain percentage of what we call essential community providers, which are providers in the rural area, so some critical access hospitals, federally qualified health centers. But they don't have to have everybody in the entire state in, so it's not an automatic that your provider will be in the insurance exchange. Now, on the other hand, the consumers are saying, well, how do I get it? How do I figure out how much it's going to cost for me to get into the insurance exchange? And that's where that website's going to be so critical, because they want to know, if I buy it for my family, what's the premium? How much am I going to be out of pocket? What's it going to cover? How are my limits going to work? And I think there's still a lot of questions there, and Jody can probably speak to that as well. I think there's a lot there that we still have to fill in, and we're approaching August. So.
And I want to point out that that's just the open enrollment, the effective date. I think there's a closed date, too, for open enrollment for the exchanges,
it
Jody.
It is. It runs through March 31st.
And so then it's a life event, same as most plans after that, correct?
That's correct, yeah.
So, Jody, why don't we jump you in right here and talk to you a little bit about your perspective of the exchanges. And while we were getting ready for the show, you and I were actually running through the application that is available right now and how complicated, even for lay people, even for educated lay people, that is right now. So,
yes, it's interesting. The thing to keep in mind when you're going into the exchange, which I'd actually like to also share a name you're going to see used more synonymous with it is the marketplace.
Okay.
So we've all known it as the exchange when it got started, but all of the documents we're seeing come out is being termed the marketplace. So it's the marketplace exchange for the insurance programs for the future for individuals, and then there'll also be a component for small business, and that's called the shop piece. So for the individual, when they go into the open enrollment session, which starts October 1st and goes through March 31st of next year, that will be for starting, it, obviously, prior to the January 1 effective date. That'll be the beginning of those plans. If you enroll later, it would be an effective date from that point forward that you enrolled in that open enrollment. So each individual would have to answer many questions, particularly geared to themselves and their family if they're going to be covering, really in regards to determining their family income. So a component of the exchange will be determining their costs and whether they qualify for any subsidies.
Right. So one thing we haven't gotten into is if you're at a certain economic level as far as your income, there may be an option to qualify for subsidy money for your premiums, but there is a lot of qualifications to that.
That's correct. So that's the challenge of the enrollment form, if you will. And it's an online form, but it has numerous questions that each individual will have to answer.
And the only way to enroll online?
It is. I believe there's going to be an opportunity to print one if you needed time to research and go back.
Mm-hmm. But do you have to submit online?
Yes.
Yes. So for the people that don't have internet, mm-hmm. Which we're working with some companies that their workforce just doesn't have internet at home. I know that's hard to believe, but these are exactly the people, a lot of them, that are not covered right now. So
that's right.
We're going to have a lot of things. I know there's a lot of questions, too, on the consumer side, like will I still be able to see my doctor? It depends on the panels of these carriers. Do we know what carriers will be in Georgia, available in Georgia?
The state has been mapped out into regions, so it depends on which region you live in. Mm-hmm. And so some regions, as Michelle had mentioned earlier, have full participation, such as the major metro area, but when you get more into the rural areas, south,
it's going to be more limited.
It will be more limited, yes. Mm-hmm.
Do we know any of the carriers? Like, have they announced a carrier list?
There is a published list, mm-hmm. and there is an actual regional map that can be found. Mm-hmm. We can
and
share
I just
that
want to reassure
listeners.
The listeners. Some of them are common that you would think, like Blue Cross Blue Shield of Georgia will be there, Aetna yes. will be there, Humana will be there, Coventry, Kaiser, Peach State. There'll be some yes. normal carriers that we're used to, not all brand new, who is that? Although I'm sure there'll be some new ones, too.
I think there'll be a couple new ones, too.
Mm-hmm. All right, very good. So, Michelle, let's go back and kind of just close out some of the changes to expect on the legal side. Pre-existing conditions will kind of go away in 2014. Can you address that briefly? That's
sure.
been a big hindrance to many, many people.
Well, and it's one of those items that they really sold the Health Care Reform Act under when they had all the debates, because mm-hmm. the concept that I don't think anyone disagreed with was that insurance plans cannot deny someone insurance starting January 1st, 2014 mm-hmm. for pre-existing conditions.
Right.
And premiums are only going to be able to be changed on certain characteristics, and the pre-existing condition would not go into that. Mm-hmm. So from that standpoint, moving forward, individuals who maybe were denied insurance previously
will have an opportunity to be covered.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And going forward, not as much fear in terms of disclosure and back to getting proper care and more preventive instead of catastrophic.
That's right. And okay. once they go preventative and they have access to care, the concept is once the quality of care improves for these individuals, then the chronic diseases and the things that cost so much in the healthcare system should decline.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And another change we talked briefly about was the Medicare tax mm-hmm. changing. Can you address that just briefly?
Sure. Anybody who has an income that's, as an individual, $200,000 or more, or as a couple or a family filing jointly at $250,000 or more, their taxes are going to go up in several different areas. So the first area where it goes up is your Medicare tax is going to go up 0.9% to 2.35%. Mm-hmm. So when you get your W-2 or you get your paycheck, you're going to notice a little bit more out mm-hmm. of your paycheck every month. Mm-hmm. And then the second thing that is going to happen is you're actually going to be taxed 3.8% if you're a high-income earner on unearned income, so dividends and things mm-hmm. that you would have that would normally be dollars you might count on from an investment standpoint. That'll have a higher tax. And then for those of us who have recently filed our taxes and you're looking at medical expense deductions, typically, in the past, As long as your medical expenses exceeded 7.5% of your income, you could deduct it. That's going up to 10%. So the threshold will be higher, which means less deductions, mm-hmm. which means more tax money mm-hmm. to potentially be paid.
It's kind of mirroring the deductibles that we have, that we've moved, the shifted, you used to be covered, now your deductible instead of $1,500 is $5,000 or $10,000. So back to our original theme of patients bearing more of the responsibility of both the cost and the decision-making. Same thing on intertwining our taxes and our health care coverage.
Absolutely. And from that standpoint, the individuals, I mean, the taxes are going to increase regardless if you walk and use your pedometer, mm-hmm. but you can help reduce your insurance premiums by using wellness programs.
So balance out and pay attention.
Exactly.
And take care of yourself anyway. That's part of the message. All right, Jody, let's move into your area. We started and have already alluded to the fact that in July, we actually had a reprieve for large employers, but you represent the employer sector and how they get ready and how they have to be compliant, and many still have to be compliant. So let's start there, and then we'll move into some of the topics that are also part of this.
And that's a very good question, because the reprieve, if you will, has had a number of folks think, well, gosh, then that means everything's been delayed, right? The answer is no.
Okay. Most hasn't.
That's correct. The one component was the employer's mandate, and really it was tied to their reporting and compliance. The piece that actually has the employer determine, are they a large employer? It's determining how many full-time employees they have, and it wasn't a simple calculation. It took into a factor of number of things, part-timers and mm-hmm. seasonal and so forth. A nice equation, and over the term of 12 months calculation that had to take place. So that was a nice reprieve, but for all others, including large employers, mm-hmm. still the provisions of the healthcare law will still remain, mm-hmm. those that are already in place, the current provisions that have been put into place already, which includes a number of things that had happened over the last few years that Michelle had mentioned on the mm-hmm. the timeline, but there's the future provisions still that are in place. The biggest, obviously, is the individual mandate, but we mm-hmm. have to look at there's going to be limits on cost sharing, and that there's rating restrictions, the 90-day waiting period limit for employers. That's a big component for certain industries. They're going to have to reevaluate their waiting period structure for employees to have access to a benefit plan. Looking at other things that go into play, such as the new requirements for the wellness, the establishment of the exchanges, and the subsidies that would be available for the lower income families and so forth. So all of those are still in play. And the employers are still preparing and every day. As a matter of fact, yesterday was the deadline for the PCORI tax. That's the patient, that's a tax that's been put in place for research, if you will, mm-hmm. That is it's a short-term tax. It begins now and goes several years with an increase, if you will, over time. But it starts simply with just a $1 fee, mm-hmm. but it had to, per member that they had, to calculate whether they had a self-funded plan or an HRA. So the employer themselves had to calculate this tax and make the deadline of the 31st. Mm-hmm. Or if it was a fully insured program, then the insurance carriers would take that on. Mm-hmm. So that's just the beginning of the number of things that the employer is having to keep a track on. They're also looking at other things to take that goes down the line in regards to their plan designs, their budgeting, and getting prepared for that future possible mandate. So that's not that they're going to stop with the compliance because there's been a delay. It's just giving them more time to figure it out right. and to track it so that they know exactly who will or who will not be a part of their population and how to comply.
Mm-hmm. So on the large employers, we've talked about the delay. For the small employers, and also to the large employers too, I want you to talk a little bit about the concept of being grandfathered and what that really means and what that does not mean.
That's a very good question as well, because grandfathering was something that was allowed when the law was first passed. But there was a strict adherence to the structure of becoming a grandfathered plan. You had to follow a certain list of qualifications and then maintain those through these last set of years up until 2014 in order to be considered grandfathered. Mm-hmm. So it isn't as traditional.
It's not as easy as I had one, so I'm good.
Right. It's not like you and I would think right. in general terms. Yeah. I had one last week, so we're good to go for next week. No, that's not exactly the case. And so unfortunately, over the course of the last few years, it's very difficult for an employer to maintain those criteria. Mm-hmm. So we have seen that there's very few today mm-hmm. that are grandfathered.
Mm-hmm. So that's interesting because you think a lot of them, if they had coverage, they're good to go. It's an ongoing process as yes. you march toward different compliance dates. Could you speak just very briefly? I know it's not in your wheelhouse, but I know you're somewhat, know a little bit about this. The Small Business Health Option Program, or SHOP, will be a good opportunity for very small employers that have not been able to afford providing any health insurance coverage to their 2 employees, 5 employees, 10, whatever, under 50, and now will be a new opportunity for them when the marketplace opens.
Yes, and that would be through the exchange, the Marketplace mm-hmm. Exchange, and you can learn more about it when you look at healthcare.gov that we'll share more about. But there are certain criteria that the employer would have to qualify for as a small employer for tax credits and such, but they are available. Mm-hmm. Those requirements are outlined on the web, and then, of course, more will be available come October 1st when the exchange is open. It was interesting, though, about that opportunity for a small business employer, and it's not that they didn't have access before. They always have, and there are several resources available and have been available for years. And a good organization here in Georgia would be the Association of Health Underwriters. There's a large Atlanta chapter, which makes the predominant Georgia membership, if you will, but mm-hmm. there's also chapters throughout the state. So the entire state has access to members that are agents, brokers, and consultants who work as a component, a middleman, if you will, to the mm-hmm. employer and the insurance marketplace. So they can connect this employer, work on their behalf to find the programs and budget that meets their needs. Mm-hmm. So this isn't anything new. It's just another alternative.
Right. So another resource, if you yes. would, for on the employer side for getting more data, keeping compliant, and
yes.
Making sure you look at what applies to you and what does not. Very good. Okay. Well, believe it or not, ladies, we are almost to the very end of our show. We've talked a little bit about how consumers can look at changes. We've talked about pre-existing goes away, expect an increase in your taxes. We've talked about individuals will now have their individual requirement to obtain health care insurance or pay the penalty or the tax on that. We've talked, Jody, a little bit with you about on the employer side, both for over 50 employers and under 50, some options and resources available for them. I'd like to just kind of go back. We talked and started the show with there's just still so much confusion in every area. In the consumers don't know what to expect. There's still not a lot on health the government website still, although we're expecting to see more and more, is just not there yet, and some things for employers. Can you kind of just go back to your areas of expertise and tell us if you had to do one or two things between now and the end of the year or pay attention, what would it be? Jody, in your areas for the employers.
Well, I think first and foremost, October 1st is a magic date. You're going to see that each employer is going to be sending out a general notice notifying their employees about the marketplace exchanges. That is a requirement for that employer to do, and that alone we think will trigger many, many questions, perhaps answer some, and we're seeing many of our employers doing a whole communication campaign around that mm-hmm. notice mm-hmm. to help fill in the gaps. So
whether if they're insured, they're going to see something from their employer anyway.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. And Michelle?
From the provider standpoint, I would tell our providers out there to really don't lose sight of the fact that the regs are still moving forward. Forget the fact that the employer mandate's just been moved back a year. And look at your current patient payer mix. And then look and get in touch with the people who you do contract with on the insurance side to make sure that you're going to be participating in the health insurance exchange. Because without the employer mandate and more people having to still buy insurance in January, they're going to have to go somewhere. So you want to capture that patient population. And the only other thing I was going to mention is with regard to the employer side, is they should not just sit back and say, okay, we got a year reprieve.
Right.
There's still a lot to be done, and I wouldn't lose sight of those regs because they will go into play and it will impact them mm-hmm. in the future.
And on the consumer side, make sure that you're paying attention, you're getting your notices, you're going to have to start making decisions, and your taxes will be tied to it in some way, shape, or form. No one will escape health care reform, that's for sure. So I want to just, in closing, give each one of you gals as experts in your field a chance to talk about your company and how our listeners might reach you. Jody.
Well, thank you, Tanya. I'm currently the vice president for the Hays Companies here in Georgia. We are a national consulting firm headquartered in Minneapolis. We're privately held, and you can reach me through LinkedIn or through our company website as well. And
which is www.hayscompanies.com,
correct.
Okay, thank you very much. And Michelle?
Well, I'm a partner at Morris Manning & Martin in the healthcare group, and the firm as a whole does just about everything from commercial real estate to corporate to litigation. But the healthcare group has a strong presence here in Atlanta and in our D.C. and our Savannah office. We also have an office in Raleigh. And I work with both providers and healthcare IT companies, especially with the huge focus on healthcare reform and how it's impacting what's really going to happen strategically. So I would be happy to speak with anyone. And you can reach me using our same company website, which is www.mmm, so three M's, and then lawlaw.com, and the profile is there on that website.
Very good. Thank you, ladies, for joining us. And the last resource I'd like to give the listeners today is actually the healthcare website when the exchange is open, which is www.healthcare.gov. And you can keep checking back there to see what is new information, and eventually that's where you would apply if this applies to you. So thank you very much, and hopefully we'll have you back in the near future on another topic.
Thanks for having us.
The Doctor's Roundtable has been a production brought to you by HealthGate and Business Radio X. HealthGate is a groundbreaking website where board-certified doctors and specialists offer savings on out-of-pocket healthcare costs. For more information about HealthGate, please visit www.healthgate.com or call 404-692-5377. We hope you tune in next week, and thank you for listening.